Hey, everybody, welcome to another episode of Rethink, where we're just looking at all the different parts of our life and maybe looking at them from a different perspective. I'm really, really excited about today. I'm going to be talking about Nick McKinley, who's going to he's going to push on you. He's going to maybe shock you. He's going to challenge you to look at some things that maybe you've never thought of like that. Before. I want to tell you up front, we're going to be talking about some adult subjects. We're not going to be nasty or dirty, but we are going to talk about some things that are happening in our culture and our world around the idea of trafficking, sex trafficking. So if your kids are in the car or in the room, you might want to either put your AirPods on or maybe just find another time to listen to this, because the what you're about to hear, it's going to challenge you. It's going to bother you too. But that's just part of life, and that's how we grow. So Nick McKinley, welcome.
Hey, Pastor Jim. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Oh, this is so good. So we are connected because somebody that works here is the sister of somebody that works there.
Correct.
And I believe you're in Dallas area.
So we're headquartered in Dallas, but I have the privilege of living in Whitefish, Montana.
Oh, we should have done this at your house.
Yes. Absolutely. We should have.
Yeah. So, hey, let's get into this, because I want to just listen and kind of hear the story of, I want to hear about your background, but then how you ended up doing what you're doing and gathering the people around you that do what you do for such a needed area. And it's around the area of sex trafficking. And this is one of those subjects, like, we know it exists, we just don't want to think about it. Right. And so give us your story. How did this come on your radar? And then give us a little bit of your background about what you do and now how you do it. And I'll shut up.
Well, thanks for that. And my background is very unique, but I'm also just further proof that God actually does use the foolish things of this world to accomplish his ends. Okay. So I think people will understand that moving forward.
Okay.
Just to set up the context, think about this. We have, in the United States of America, a drug enforcement agency. 90% of drugs are legal. Ophthalmologists use cocaine to numb the retina of the eye before surgery, before retina surgery. 90% of drugs are legal, yet we spend double-digit billions every single year fighting the war on drugs, which is, I think everybody can agree, is not going well. We spend billions of dollars every year on a Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. Last time I checked, alcohol, tobacco, and firearms are all legal commodities. Most of the people that I know sitting in Texas or Montana usually have alcohol, tobacco, and firearms within arm's reach at all times. And yet we spend billions of dollars fighting what is the illicit sale of these legal commodities.
Okay.
The 13th Amendment makes 100% of human slavery illegal. There's no gray area there. Who's got the ball on that issue? That's the epiphany that I had when I was working at the CIA. I was a special agent at the Central Intelligence Agency within a very small kinetic focused unit. Really, what we did was when you look at, you know, when you watch movies, Homeland is the one everybody brings up. I haven't seen it, but I'm familiar with it. And they have the case officer who's out front, right? The Carrie character who's collecting the information and stuff. And then you have the people behind the scenes who are doing a lot of the gun work, who are doing a lot of the surveillance type work and things like that. That's what I had the privilege of getting to be, was one of those guys. In that work, which was primarily counterterrorism and counter-narcotics related, I was constantly bumping into human trafficking related things. And I just figured that somebody somewhere had the ball on that issue. And what I figured out fast forward, I was in Lashkargah, Afghanistan, and we had some, what I like to call, smoking gun intel on a human trafficker that was moving kids across the AFPAC border, across the Afghanistan-Pakistan border. And there was nowhere to put that intel. Nobody's got the ball on that issue. And it wasn't because there's some super secret group that I didn't have access to. I mean, I was the super secret group, you know, for better or worse. I had access to everything in the entire United States government. And so I started asking around to all my friends and saying, hey, you know, what do you know about the human trafficking issue? And have you ever had a human trafficking related mission where you had to go after a human trafficker, you were told to collect intel on a human trafficker, anything revolving around human trafficking? And keep in mind, just like, you know, lots of people in ministry, I know lots of spies and special operators because that's my background. So I asked everyone I knew, and I could not find a single person who had ever had a mission that centered around human trafficking. And so that made me curious, having access to essentially all of the most classified information in the government. I started looking for who had what where. And what I found was that the most powerful military, economic, and intelligence might the world has ever seen, which is the United States of America, didn't have an integrated capability, a centralized brain, if you will, for fighting human trafficking. And that was a pivot.
How did you process that? It's like, because it seems like it's everywhere because you kept bumping into it, and everybody knew it existed. So what was the response? Like, not our problem, or yeah?
Everybody just assumed somebody was doing something. The same assumption I had. It was, you know, I assumed somebody was focused on this issue. I was focused on the counterterrorism, right, and espionage issues and things like that, counter narcotics. So, okay, well, I'm focused there. Surely there's a version of Nick McKinley somewhere that's focused on human trafficking. And you never, I mean, you know, when you're in the government, you can't know all things. It's a rather large place. So you just continue about your mission until your mission intersects with the mission that you assumed was happening. And that's what happened here. So your listeners can look at September 11th. September 11th, the civilian populace all assumed that all the government agencies were sharing terrorism information. And what came out of the September 11th committee was what those of us who were working in the government already knew, which is that nobody was sharing information. And so they solved that problem. And so there's all these things that the government thinks is, or that the citizens think are happening. Well, those of us in the government, even at very high levels, we think those things are happening too. When you're confronted with this reality of there's nothing happening at scale on the human trafficking issue, especially in the United States of America, because dollar for dollar, the largest human trafficking market in the world is the United States of America. Like, we're it.
Really?
Yeah. So when you start looking at the issue through that lens, you kind of get to what William Wilberforce said, you know, you can choose to look the other way, but you can never again say you did not know. And this was now I know, what am I going to do with this information? And I really felt this very strong calling to do something with this information. So fast forward a bunch of academic research, because at the end of the day, I'm a big time nerd. People tend to focus on my, you know, shooter special ops background. I'm very proud of that. But at the same time, like I can devour a book with the best of them. And so I started researching the human trafficking issue and really figured out that it was a lot like terrorism. Okay. It's a black market. It's got commodities that are sold in that black market. We know how to fight terrorism. I mean, if there's anything that the taxpayers and your listeners should be very, very proud of, it's the special operations and intelligence capability in this country. Mm. I mean, you'll notice we haven't had planes crashing into buildings. We haven't had bombs going off in LA rush hour traffic. And it's not for lack of trying on the part of the bad guys. They try constantly. And so when I started realizing that the human trafficking market, the counter narcotics market, the terrorism market, all these illicit markets all had a lot of overlap, then if we could fight one, we could use relatively the same methodology to fight the other, minus the drones, working on that one. But we don't have those yet. But we could use the same methodologies. And it was really a data story. It's a data and software and like tech nerd story. Because I want you to think about this. We have always focused on the cleanup. We have always focused on building restoration homes for human trafficking victims and doing that type of work. which is extremely important work. And the people who do it are true saints, if there are any living saints, like it's them. That is extremely difficult stuff. But that's the equivalent, as one of our employees, Sandy Storm, likes to say, that's the equivalent of pulling the wounded off the battlefield without ever confronting the enemy that's creating the wounded in the first place.
That's it. That's it.
And
yeah, one of my favorite Bible stories is the Good Samaritan, right? Yeah. So it's great to get the guy on the side of the road. Somebody needs to go clean up the road to Jericho because people keep getting killed on the road to Jericho, right?
Right.
So it's like, yeah, let's pick up the guy out of the ditch. Let's keep guys from getting in ditches.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
That's where you're going.
Well, and you can even look at it, and you'll have to remind me exactly where Paul says it, where he talks about, you know, it's not enough to say, you know, to somebody who is hungry and cold,
right,
go forth and you know, be full and warm.
Be warm and well fed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, James, no, like you
James
actually,
chapter two. Absolutely.
Yeah. You actually have to give them the blanket and give them some food.
Yes. Yes.
And give them the safe space in which to not get the blanket stolen and actually eat the food. And so that's really where I was in the fight against human trafficking. It's if we can fight all these other things, we can fight human trafficking. We know how to do this. I know all the people who are, you know, world's foremost experts in hunting down bad guys and in going after the human trafficker, because we cannot have a human trafficking victim if we do not have a human trafficker. It's the common denominator in this equation, right? You cannot, there's no possible way to have a human trafficking victim if you don't have a human trafficker. So why don't we also focus time and resources on going after the human trafficker? And then I started asking myself, well, why has nobody done this before? Well, to quote another movie, you do have to have a particular set of skills in order to make this happen. And that's where we took all of our, you know, decades of experience in hunting down terrorists and narco traffickers and getting good people out of bad places, and combine that with our technical ability to create an organization that very specifically tells law enforcement who the human trafficker is, so they can go take traction, they can go take action, sorry, against that trafficker.
So Nick, are you saying that there's not a government agency or a budget in our government specifically assigned to combat human trafficking?
No, there is not. There is some great people at the FBI that do a little bit when they can. There are some great folks at Homeland Security who do a little bit when they can. But where I am in Montana, we have less than a dozen FBI agents for the fourth largest state in the union. So we always think about the federal government, but the reality is that the heavy lifting in the fight against human trafficking actually happens at the state and local level. It's your it's your local law enforcement officers that are doing the major majority of that, you know, of those investigations, and they don't have the resources. They don't have, you know, they're especially in this day and age of you know, defunding the police, where we need to actually refund the police. They have less and less resources, and that's not just less and less money. That people are leaving law enforcement in droves, and they're not being replaced, and they're, you know, we're losing, it's a brain drain. We're losing all that experience as well. So there's really, you know, the local law enforcement officer is the one doing the heavy lifting, and they don't have any of the resources. And that was part of the thesis we had for starting Deliver Fund, you know, the name of my organization, where when a guy like me goes into North Africa, you guys can probably guess the country, you know, 10 years ago, I don't care how much training I have. I'm one person, and overwhelming odds are just that, they're overwhelming. So when an entire country wants to kill you, you got to try to make friends with people real fast. and so what we would do in the military and, allegedly in the intelligence agencies, is we would go in and we would find people who were friendly to us, or let's just say their loyalty could be had a price and could be purchased,
yeah.
And then we would get them to be on our team, And so we would just have a few of us Americans and then maybe dozens to hundreds of them. Okay, well, now we're a force we can actually fight. And so what would you do? We would equip them with the stuff that they needed to do their job. We would train them in how to use that stuff. And then we would advise them on how best to go after our common enemies. We do the same thing with law enforcement, and we equip them with software, data, and various technologies. We train them in the methodologies of how to go after human traffickers, and then we advise them with intelligence and manpower support on the back end so that they can go after those traffickers. Now, what that has resulted in over the last 7 years is we currently work with over 600 law enforcement agencies across the globe, everything from Interpol to the Bureau to HSI to, you know, small town sheriff's departments in the middle of nowhere, Missouri. We've created the largest human trafficking database on the planet. That's about 240,000 times larger than the previous attempts. And we have that all those law enforcement agencies and officers connected or have the ability to connect within a centralized platform that allows cases to be deconflicted. And it allows your state and local law enforcement officers to essentially act as a networked group. They act independently, but they can work together as a network, very similar to the way that you've got a church, somebody else has a church, another pastor has a church, but you will all work together to make your city better.
Yeah. So let's pick up about how prevalent is this? How big is it out there? How does a person get pulled into that kind of lifestyle? You can't have this business without clients, right? And then how do you even, where do you start to identify, you know? So that's a fire hose. So just pick any place and start.
Sure. And they're all connected.
Okay.
As I said before, you can't get human traffickers to answer a customer survey, right? So it's very hard to measure. But what we can measure is what the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children tells us, which is 400,000 kids a year-ish going missing or no longer under the control of a parent or a guardian. And about one in six of those get approached by a human trafficker within 48 hours. So
are they just out patrolling? They know where these kids end up hanging out, and they're just like sharks. What is it?
So it's, yes, it is that. But that's more the traditional model. What we're seeing currently, and what really happened a lot with COVID, is the online trafficking, right?
Yeah.
And that's how these traffickers can actually get access to these children. So we have trafficking victims who go to school and go home every night, and their parents know that something's wrong, and they think they just might be in a fight with a, you know, friend, boyfriend, girlfriend. They might be getting into drugs or something, but they're actually being trafficked, but they're going to their parents' home every night. And that's a phenomenon that, you know, social media brought on called sextortion. So there's so many of these. In fact, if you go to Deliver Fund's YouTube channel, there's a video called The War Against Trafficking, which really just kind of shows how this works.
We'll post that link.
Told through the story of a couple of human trafficking victims, one of which was involved in a case that we had been involved with. And we actually found her trafficker, law enforcement arrested her trafficker. He's currently serving a sentence in a federal penitentiary for human trafficking. So the way that people need to think about this, I think, is a little more important, because we all want to know, like, how many victims, how many traffickers. Well, it's hundreds of thousands. On the victims, it's the millions side. But here's what I want you to think about. Okay. We always thought of trafficking as the thing that happens over there on the other side of the tracks, right? In the socioeconomically depressed areas of town. That doesn't happen here in middle-class America or wealthy America. So the school in California is a private school, about 80 grand a year to send your kid there as base tuition, one of the most recognizable schools in the country. And there was a girl from a very recognizable family who was being trafficked out of that school. And you know, law enforcement got involved. Everything was you know, was able to, justice was seen. But the point is that it doesn't happen over, you know, just on that side of the tracks anymore. And the reason is because there are no more tracks, because everything's online. Right. People don't know who their neighbors are, but they have, you know, look at me. I have 30,000 friends on Instagram. It's like, well, they're not your friends, but that's the way that we view the world now. So the national.
When I think of trafficking, I think about a Liam Neeson movie or something like that, you know? And it's like my daughter got kidnapped and against her will was sold to a high bidder. And that's sex slavery or something like that. What you're saying is that a 15-year-old kid in a suburban home after school is getting groomed by a trafficker and sets up meetings. And this person, I don't want to say voluntarily, but they're a child. So they've definitely been deceived along this.
Right.
They're voluntarily engaging in this.
They're not being groomed after school. They're being groomed in their bedrooms over an electronic device. So when that 12-year-old girl gets mad at her dad because he won't let her wear the mini skirt to school and or to the event or whatever she's going to do, which is every 12-year-old girl at some point in every father's life, right? Mad and goes stomps off to her room. It used to be she would sit there and, you know, pout or, you know, write woe is me in her journal or whatever. Now she gets on TikTok and makes a video saying she's mad at her dad. And predators are sitting there waiting for that very thing, waiting for that very moment of vulnerability to say, you're so beautiful. He's just trying to get you. He's just trying to keep you from growing up. Right. She's trying to fill that God-sized hole in her heart with other men, with attention from other places. And so then that, I mean, I grew up with three sisters. I'll tell you, the easiest people in the world to manipulate are teenage girls. I mean, I told my sister once that I would, I would change her blinker fluid in her car for $5 and she paid me. this is what's happening online. So people think that, I've got great locks on my doors. I teach my kids stranger danger. Like, they know the physical world interactions, but what about the anonymity of the cyber world? So then that trafficker starts talking to this 12-year-old girl who can't wear the miniskirt. And I guarantee you every father of a daughter who's listening right now is suddenly paying a lot more attention to the radio than they are the road. So eyes on the road, everybody. But because this is what's happening. And then that girl gets manipulated by that predator over a period of anything from days to weeks to months. And then finally sends that photo she will regret for the rest of her life. And we all know what I mean. And as soon as she does, then that guy's got her. And he says, hey, I'm going to ruin you. I'm going to post this photo on social media. I'm going to post it on your class website. I'm going to post it in all these different places. Unless you meet me here, right? Wow. So she doesn't know what to do. She's scared. She meets the guy. He drugs her and then starts selling her in her own city or gets her to another city quickly where she doesn't have a network and then starts selling her. And so it's not the, you know, van pulls up, hood goes over the girl, she ends up in Dubai. Like, does that happen? Sure, but we're talking like single digit instances of that happening every year. What is actually happening at massive scale is American citizens, American primarily girls. We see it with boys as well, but primarily young women who are American citizens who are being trafficked by American citizens and sold to American citizens. And I think that's the biggest takeaway. And that was my huge epiphany when I started researching the human trafficking issue when I was at the CIA. It was that this is an American problem. By the DOJ's own statistics, 86% of the victims involved in their human trafficking cases that they prosecute are U.S. citizens. So this is happening to our children right now. And that's why at Deliver Fund, we're primarily focused on the United States. We work overseas. We work with Interpol. We work with we were in Kyiv last November until the Russians basically kicked us out. But we work internationally, but 90% of our focus is on our backyard protecting our children here in the United States of America.
Okay, so here's my point of reference, and I'm sure there's a tie-in. So I've been given this statistic is that if you took all money in professional sports and combined them, more money is spent in America on pornography than all professional sports combined. So it's like expanding.
Sure.
Do you link those two things?
Absolutely.
The propensity for increased trafficking with, and how do you link them?
So we link it with data. None of what I say for the most part, unless I say so, is my opinion on what is happening. One of the nice things about being on, about sitting on top of the largest human trafficking data company on the planet is that we have all the data to actually be able to see what's happening. So we know, let's take COVID as a great example that everybody can see. Actually, let's go back even farther from that. That picture that I said that gets taken of that 12-year-old girl, where do you think that picture ends up? It ends up on porn sites.
Right.
Because those porn sites have no policy, no law that we hold them to in this country, which is a whole other issue we have to get around, to ensure an ID and an age verification of the girl who's being posted. They just go, really? On, well, what does it look or what does it not look? Yeah, they don't. There's no verification required. And so, you know, you have to show your driver's license to buy alcohol or tobacco over the internet, but you don't have to show your driver's license to either post or buy pornography over the internet. And this isn't a policy of like, there shouldn't be pornography, right? There is a First Amendment and it is what it is, but we do need to have guardrails and things on that. So that's the big problem there. The National Center for Missing and Exploited Children found that they had an 846% increase in suspected child trafficking cases in just a 5-year period. Well, the question is why? And it's because of the smartphone, right? If you overlay their data with smartphone adoption rates, you see almost and the Facebook app addition to the App Store, you see almost a 1-to-1 correlation. Because now it's happening online. So just like at DeliverFund, I can access a community and I can get my message out there. You know, Jim, you and I can have this conversation over the internet, where pre-internet, this was cost prohibitive. We have to make sure that I just happen to be traveling through or something like that, right? There was a lot of expense involved in having this conversation. Now we can do it for near free. And traffickers can do the same thing. So all of the technologies that we use to, for lack of a better term, scale our businesses, human traffickers are using the same thing to scale their business. So that means not only reaching product, aka the victim, and connecting with the customer, but it also allows them to diversify their customer base, because now what we saw during COVID is a great example is the in-person commercial sex services. Nobody wanted to have those. So traffickers put their trafficking victims on Pornhub and OnlyFans and websites like that. They started marketing their victims through Instagram more. They started actually using these platforms to essentially do what we call cyber trafficking. And we see this in the overseas market as well, where we have, you know, pedophiles in the United States are paying people overseas to abuse children on video. That is yet another form of trafficking. So when you look at especially within the commercial sex space, traffickers are going to use whatever mode is available to them to make money. And that's where so the pornography industry, especially in the amateur pornography industry, even in the professional pornography industry, and that's where you see primarily non-US citizens getting defrauded, forced, or coerced into acting in pornography videos against their will. Or maybe they do make that choice, but then they don't get paid, which then means it's trafficking. You start to see all of these intersections. And so the pornography industry, the commercial sex industry, the It's called anime industry, something I learned about that I didn't know about. It's just very, it's like cartoony. All of these industries all connect. And ultimately, when you look at, you know, where does it lead? Well, it's very well documented. You know, the fact that, you know, an addiction to pornography eventually leads people to acting out the things that they're seeing in the pornography, like, it's very well documented. It's not even up for debate, sure. Right, on whether or not that happens. And so I tell people who, you know, anytime I have an opportunity to talk to a group of men, right, if you are engaging in especially the amateur pornography industry, if you've done that more than three times, extremely high likelihood you have fed money into the human trafficking market, and you have actually paid for the services of a slave.
Connect that. So, how is watching up to three financially contribute? Is there advertising involved or something, or what?
No. So the traffickers will. So if you're paying, right? So like, let's take a platform like Pornhub. I don't know if you've ever heard of that. It was owned by a company called MindGeek. We started speaking out years ago about the fact that they had trafficking happening on the platform. Well, they have now been criminally indicted by the DOJ for having trafficking and child pornography on their platform. And they knew it. And the DOJ in the indictment, people can look it up in Pacer, in the indictment lays out the argument on why they know that they know that they knew it. Go backwards into backpage.com. A lot of people know about that website. It was the website that took over the commercial sex service business from Craigslist when Craigslist decided to no longer have escorts on their site, which was the right decision. So backpage.com took that over. Well, their entire C-suite is currently sitting in prison for human trafficking and child exploitation. So these websites are the way that traffickers make money off of their victims. Now, sometimes that's renting them by the hour or half hour for commercial sex services in person. And sometimes that's renting them through a pornography website, especially websites in the amateur pornography space. Sometimes they use strip clubs after hours to trade and sell girls between each other like a cattle market. And this is not one-off things. I mean, we have these well documented, and there's case after case after law enforcement case of these types of things happening. But for some reason, the American man wants to put his head in the sand and pretend like, well, that's not the porn that I'm watching. How do you know that?
Yeah.
How do you know that? You know, in fact,
I've actually heard that.
Yeah, it's a very high likelihood that it actually is. When you talk to dancers in strip clubs, they all have a trafficking story. When you talk to porn stars, you find that about half to a little bit more of them have a trafficking story. So people involved in the commercial sex industry, when you talk to prostitutes. You know, there's a very different, there's a big difference between prostitution and human trafficking, right? So true prostitution is when somebody is making a choice to essentially perform a service, and then they are getting to keep the proceeds of their labor, right? If we just look at it strictly academically, human trafficking on the commercial sex side is when somebody else is either defrauding, forcing, or coercing that person to provide those commercial sex services to somebody else. And then the person doing the forcing is getting to keep the proceeds of the labor. So when we look at it through that lens, you know, I come from the military special ops community, right? I mean, that community is, should we say, just has a bit of a reputation of making fraternities look like Girl Scout camps. And those guys were frequenting massage parlors and brothels overseas. And when you talk to them, they're like, oh, but I talked to this girl and she's trying to put herself through school, or she's just trying to take care of her kid. And I'm sure that's what she told you. What about the trafficking victim that told the law enforcement officers in an operation we were involved in the same thing until we presented her with enough evidence that told her why we thought she was a human trafficking victim. And she finally broke down and said, "He has my baby." And when law enforcement got her phone and started reading through the text messages, they saw all the threats that this trafficker was making against that woman. And the trafficker was in a completely different city, completely different state, but he had her baby. What mother wouldn't do whatever it took to make sure that she could protect her baby? So in this case, the trafficker had kidnapped her baby and then was forcing her to work as a, you know, work in commercial sex services and exploiting her through commercial sex services. And she was forced to do everything from, escort services to commercial sex services to pornography online. And the lever that trafficker was using was a baby. Well, I'm sure that every single customer of hers thought that, well, she was willingly doing this because that's exactly what she told them.
Yeah, sure. Well, so you know about this. So we have policies around here because I work at a church and stuff like that. I assume that there's software on my computer. If there's not, I don't want them to tell me that would track what my search history is and things like that. We got software on phones, all that. I assume with technology today, like I have a guy that works in tech and he said, yeah, your phone is listening to you. Your smart TV is listening to you. I mean, it's just the reality. I assume that if I were to go on Pornhub has a record of me.
Not necessarily. So this is part of the problem. These websites,
no accountability.
Yeah, these websites are not incentivized to keep any type of accountability. And we have this line that we have to walk in this country between privacy. I love it when people tell me how important their privacy is to me, and then they're sitting there posting on Instagram pictures of their kids. I'm like, with their home address in the back. I'm like, you're in their license plate number. I'm like, your privacy is not important to you. Like you're saying the words, but your actions are doing the complete opposite. So these websites are not incentivized to have information to report to law enforcement. If law enforcement needs information, what they prefer to say is, hey, sorry, we don't know. All we know is that's account number 12345. Here's all the information we have. It's account number 12345. They don't collect IP addresses. They don't collect any of that. They really make no good faith effort to keep trafficking and child exploitation from happening, and then to be a resource to make it so that they can be a resource to law enforcement in holding accountable traffickers and child exploiters. So that's
okay. I was hoping you'd say something different and scare every man from ever being on a porn site again. So
no.
I was hoping you'd lie to us, but then the flip side is, but if I use my credit card, if I use my credit card on that website, now they have a record of me, right?
Sure. But there's lots of ways to get around that. I mean, people can get on the University of YouTube for about 5 minutes and they can figure out all the different ways that they can pay for those.
Nick, You're not helping me here. Well, I'm so trying to scare the hell out of me. Right?
But this highlights why we exist at Deliver Fund is,
that's, you know, right.
The world is increasingly anonymous and we need to keep some semblance of online anonymity, but at the same time, we need to protect people. So, you know, if you think about it this way, for the first time in history, a non-familial 40-year-old man can contact a 12-year-old girl at the very moment that she says that she's mad at her dad. So at the very moment of vulnerability, and he can do that at scale at almost no cost. He can get a free smartphone. He can use the free Wi-Fi at, you know, pick a fast food restaurant. And all he has to have is a lack of morals and ethics that allows him to exploit another human being. That's it. I mean, he can even do the research on how to do it online because these traffickers actually will communicate. And so that's where we come in at Deliver Fund. So that's the problem we're solving. We always like to look at, well, we need government to solve that. And I agree. Government should be doing what we're doing at Deliver Fund, but they're not. So I can either complain about that or I can do something about that. And that's why we chose to do something about it. So what we are is we are in these websites I mean, we're like white on rice. We've got our own computers. I mean, we're probably, I think we're one of the only nonprofits in the world. We have our own supercomputer. And so we are in these websites, our analysts who are all former, you know, pick a three-letter agency or former law enforcement are embedded in these, using fake profiles. That's right. Instagram and Facebook. I said it, using these fake profiles where they are posing as human traffickers, and they're actually embedded in these human traffickers' communications, and they're talking to each other, and they're the traffickers like to essentially mentor the next generation. It's really sick stuff, but we use that against them. And so when we do counter human trafficking operations with law enforcement, we get customers by the dozens. So that's what should scare what should scare listeners who are in the commercial sex space, who are customers in the commercial sex space, is like, if you're touching the internet, we can get you. So law enforcement may not always have the ability to uncover who actually owns that burner number, to uncover, you know, who the MAC address of the computer and those types of things, but we can, because that's what we learned to do against terrorists. So we take that information and we give it to law enforcement. So law enforcement, then when they conduct an operation, they're not only getting human traffickers, they're able to rescue the victims of human trafficking, but then we get a lot of the customers as well. And so far that is just working extremely well. You look at on the pornography site side, a lot of the people that customers think they're communicating with will be possibly our computers, possibly some of our analysts. We can get behind these paid review websites and actually pull down the data that they put up there. There's these websites that are like Yelp for massage parlors and porn sites.
They're bragging about it.
Things like that. Yeah. They're like, oh, here's the services I received. If you go in there, make sure you ask for this girl. And we collect all that data and we put it in. And here's the thing I can tell you is that professional spies, I can tell you because it was one, have a hard enough time keeping our burner numbers and identities and all that stuff straight. I mean, there is people that I served with for decades that I don't even know their real first name. Right. Yeah. So we screw that stuff up all the time. How much do you think one of your, you know, pornography customers or commercial sex services customers screw that up? And they only have to screw it up one time. So they can literally have a 99% success rate. They can make one small mistake in their tradecraft to try to protect their anonymity, and we got them. We know who they are. And it's the aggregation of data that we are using to our benefit to protect children. Because obviously at the end of the day, Nick McKinley cannot do anything about the fact that a 12-year-old girl is going to make a TikTok video saying she's mad at her dad. I can't do anything about that. But what I can do is make it so there's no trafficker there to prey on her when she does.
Okay, so let's talk about that, because you had I just wanted to push pause when you pointed at this and every 12-year-old girl, right? So parents aren't aware of this.
No.
Either they're choosing not to be aware, or they're just naive, all right? So they're either, I don't want to know about that, but the end result is the same. Mm-hmm. You know, so I don't know what to do about the men who are doing this, but you did have the attention of every dad who's driving down the interstate today on the way to work, listening to this going, holy crap, my daughter's been coming home super depressed. I thought it was because she's 13.
Right.
What are the signs? What do you look for? How do you coach? How do you have those conversations in the home? And again, you know, I'm a pastor. I know all humans are depraved and lie. So if you don't want you to know about my life, I'll lie, right? Mm-hmm. But like, what's some coaching you could give to parents right now? Just say like, hey, just be on the lookout for this, and don't be naive here, and always do this, but never do that. Are there anything you've learned along that like, if parents could just get their arms around two or three things,
yes,
a lot of this might go down.
The biggest thing that parents have to get their minds wrapped around is the fact that they do live in a technological world, And I'm not good with technology is not an excuse for protecting your kids from it. You know,
that's good.
I am not good with drugs. but I don't use the fact that I'm not good with drugs and don't have a history of drug use to say, well, you know, I'm not good with that. And I don't know much about it. So I'm not going to try to protect my kids against drugs. Right.
Right.
I know a lot about firearms. There's other people who don't know a lot about firearms, but they're still, they know enough to protect their kids from accidents with firearms, from negligence with firearms.
Right. Sure. Right,
it's
good.
The same thing here. If you're a parent in the modern world, you have to, it is your responsibility and duty to learn what's happening with these technologies. No, you don't have to be able to make them do all the things, but you do need to learn how it works. And that's relatively easy to do, right? Don't watch Yellowstone for one night and instead do some simple searching on YouTube and you'll learn everything you need to know. So the first thing is the parent accountability and responsibility. But the second thing is the opposite of that is knowing, and I think every parent knows this. I mean, my children are young, so I'm probably going to learn this at some point. You can never control your children, and eventually they're going to move out. So they have to be able to, you have to be a safe person to talk to about things. And did the 12-year-old girl send the bad photo or the explicit photo to the predator? Why did she agree to go meet that predator and not go tell her mom and dad and say, hey, I've really screwed up and I've done something that I think, you know, is gonna put me in danger. So your children have to feel safe enough to come to you with something like that. I mean, we all screwed up. I mean, thank God the internet did not exist when I was a kid. Thank God it did not.
I got a National Geographic magazine and thought I was in heaven, you know?
Yeah. So. I mean, oh boy. Yeah. We all made mistakes. We all screwed up. Our children need to be able to come to us now and say, hey, I screwed up and I need help fixing this. Because really what has increased, it's not that the danger has really increased, because the danger when I was a kid and the danger of children today, it's relatively the same. It's that the consequences have increased significantly. So the things that I did don't live forever. There's only a couple of people who know about them. And those people know what I did for the last 20 years. And so I'm going to guess they're not going to say anything. But today, the things that people do live forever. Anything that touches the internet, there is no such thing as deleting something off the internet, right? It's there for forever. It can be discovered eventually. And so helping children understand that, hey, you know, I did something I shouldn't have done, but mom and dad or whoever, grandma, grandpa, aunt, uncle, you know, pastor, teacher, whoever, somebody is a safe person that I can go to say, hey, I did this and I need help fixing this problem. Because that's the case, especially when parents can help their children understand in the cases of sextortion, which is what we talked about, right? Sending the explicit photo and then using that to extort the child into doing other things. That is so illegal. And if a child makes that mistake and tells an authority figure, and authority figures get law enforcement involved, and law enforcement will move heaven and earth to make sure that those photos are deleted to the extent possible and as removed and buried as deep in the internet as can happen. The whole world will rally around them to help them fix that problem, because everybody understands the consequences and how bad the consequences are long term.
That's good.
So I think those are really the two things that parents have to do.
So here, if I could, I'm going to add one more. I worked with kids for 22 years and it's like, well, I've heard parents say, well, I don't want my kids to think I don't trust them. And I'm like, you trust them. You don't trust a 13-year-old's ability to make a good decision.
Exactly.
So, right. So it's like, if I could coach parents around this at all, is don't be naive enough to think it could not happen to your child because you have she's a good girl or she loves Jesus or whatever. So it's like, but she doesn't know how to process an experienced predator's like manipulation. All right.
Right.
She could be a straight A student, loves Jesus, loves you. You have great communication. She's not ready, or he's not, whatever this. She can't compete against a 40-year-old who's been doing this for 10 years.
Right.
Right. So you have, I would coach parents, you have to have the conversation, not in an accusative way, but maybe to create that, like, I don't know that this will ever happen, but let's have a plan for when it, or if it happens. Would that be accurate, fair, good?
I think you're right on. And there's some great analogies here that those parents already probably are working with. So, you know, Christian parents probably train their children in, you know, apologetics to an extent at a younger age than maybe would have happened in the past, because they want them to be able to take their biblical worldview into the world where we're supposed to take it and actually back it up. And it, you know, and when I was raised, it was like, oh, well, you go to church. Well, why? Well, because mom and dad take you there and you believe in God. Well, why? Well, because mom and dad said it was real, but we didn't have access to the same data. Well, now, you know, I mean, if your child's going to a liberal university, they probably better be able to make a fine-tuned theory of the universe argument. They better be able to make a mathematical and a physical argument for the existence of God, right? Or a philosophical argument, because I feel it doesn't cut it anymore. So the same thing happens. So, okay, well, you train your children up, you know, through grade school and through, through high school, to send them into the world and hopefully carry the foundation that you provided. Well, this is no different. Yeah. You've got to train them up and show them what it looks like. One of the things that we've done to try to make that easy is one of our director of analytics, Kara Smith, has a series on our YouTube channel, on our Deliver Fund YouTube channel, called Hunting with the Huntress, where she actually breaks down the social media of human traffickers and shows, you know, and these are like anything from 30-second to 3-minute clips that shows how these human traffickers operate and how they work. And then she has another small podcast that they're only about 15-minute segments that actually breaks down human trafficking news stories so that people can actually know how the process works. So just like we understand the process of addiction, if so we know how to talk to our children about substance abuse and how that can lead to addiction. Well, it's the same thing here, where we can talk to our children about essentially cyber abuse and what that can lead to if they don't get in front of it.
That's good. So that takes me back to your first one about educating yourself, because when you said your parents spend time, you know, training their kids up in apologetics, things like that. Here's what I'm experiencing with parents right now. And I don't mean to go down a rabbit trail, but like a lot of my parents have no idea how to have a conversation about the gender issues that are being through the public school right now. They're just confused with pronouns. It feels like it ambushed them because they weren't paying attention. Mm-hmm. So they have to get educated on that. I think that a lot of parents are going like, that's over there. This trafficking thing is over there.
Right.
And it's like, no. It's in your suburb. It's on your cul-de-sac. It's in your school. It's in your Christian school, right?
Absolutely.
It's everywhere. And so if we could say, don't wait till it blows up before you go like, oh, I wish I would have paid attention, but educate yourself. And do you guys have what's your website? We'll post all this.
Website is deliverfund.org. That's deliver as in deliver me from evil. Fund is in funds.
Nice.
.org. And so we also have, and will have coming out pretty soon, some computer-based training modules around human trafficking 101. We're going to be having some Zoom sessions with some of our analysts for people to be able to actually talk to them about what's happening within the human trafficking space. And most of our social media, you know, go follow us on, you know, at Deliver Fund. We're on all the platforms at Deliver Fund. I'm personally at Deliver Fund Nick, Kara the Huntress. You just spell it out on Instagram, it'll pop up. And those are really, and then also author Sandy Storm. Those are really the outlets that we use to put as much information as we can out there. So make sure that make sure that, you know, Deliver Fund's information is showing up in your Instagram feed. And that in itself will be an education on how to protect your children from trafficking.
Great. We'll post all of that. So how are you funded?
We are privately funded. We're a 501c3 nonprofit, and we are privately funded by the generosity of donors.
How would a person who's, because I had lunch today with a person who's already involved in another organization doing something similar, but he wanted all your information too, right? Mm-hmm. So if somebody wanted to get involved with you on a funding level and a support level, how would they do that?
You can just, well, so a bunch of different ways. You can just contact us through any of the social media that we talked about. You can contact us through our website. You can contact my personal email, which is nick.mckinley@deliverfund.org. I get lots of emails, so please give me a little bit of grace in my response time. Really that's the best way. You know, everybody wants to, you know, when they hear about what we do at Deliver Fund, right? We have this line of computers, t-shirts. I'm actually wearing one right now. It's called our Shooters with Computers line of t-shirts, right? Because we all used to be shooters, and now the weapon is the keyboard. And that's a very, very, again, particular set of skills to learn and hone over a very long period of time. And so we have lots of people who say, I want to volunteer for Deliver Fund. Well, that's like saying you want to volunteer for heart surgery. right. I don't want a volunteer heart surgeon. I want somebody who's the most highly trained professional I can find who does this all day, every day. And really that's the differentiator at Deliver Fund. What we've brought to the table is taking, you know, people from CIA, NSA, FBI, specialists from ICAC, specialists from all these different intelligence communities, and putting them together in a way that fights human trafficking at the scale it's happening. And so we have a waiting list for law enforcement asking for our support. And in many cases, sure, with some of the better human trafficking task forces in the country, like the one in Houston is a great example, their full-time human trafficking analyst is actually one of our employees. They couldn't afford to have a full-time human trafficking analyst. And so the generosity of donors put a former Naval Special Warfare terrorism analyst in the Human Trafficking Rescue Alliance in Houston. So how does why does that matter to Tulsa, Oklahoma, or Colorado Springs, or Boulder? Well, the reason why is traffickers are highly transitory. So traffickers move everything from every couple of days to every couple of months and somewhere in between. And so they exploit the lack of connection with state and local law enforcement resources. They know how to avoid federal cases because a case has to be so big before a federal prosecutor will agree to take it. They know, so they exploit our own system against us. And we are then turning that on its head and making it so that when a trafficker moves from Houston over to Las Cruces, New Mexico, and he gets on I-25 and moves up to Albuquerque and then to the Springs and then to Denver and then to Fort Collins and Boulder and then to Casper and then eventually hits I-90 and goes over to Billings and starts making their way over to Minneapolis, we make sure that every single one of those law enforcement departments is all connected. So if they don't get picked up in Las Cruces, they get picked up in Albuquerque before they can make it to Denver. And if they don't get picked up in Denver, they make it to the, they'll get picked up in the Springs. If they don't get picked up in the Springs, they'll get there. And so we make it so eventually they're going to drive right into one of the traps that we set for them.
That's good. Hey, so if you're dreaming, if you had, what are you waiting on? If you just had more funding, What's the next big thing you would do?
So here's where things get really cool, and I'm going to take the liberty to just totally nerd out. What happens and this happens both within Deliver Fund and within law enforcement and the intelligence community, you have, when you're looking for human trafficking activity, you have human beings that are looking at what, quite frankly, is pornography. And we screen our people very specifically using some PhD psychologist to make sure that we're not letting the fox into the hen house, so to speak, right? Using the same techniques that JSOC, SOCOM, and the CIA use. And so we have analysts sitting there scrolling, looking for indicators of human trafficking activity. And they're doing that with their eyes. Well, that hurts the human brain. And also humans need vacation. They need time off. They need care and feeding. And they make mistakes when they get tired. What we are doing is we are building a machine learning algorithm that will look at that content so that humans don't have to. So in the future, you will have, say, Instagram or Google or Facebook or TikTok. They will have the ability, and law enforcement will have the ability to detect human trafficking without looking at the content in aggregate. So the computer will say, hey, I believe that based on the 32 different indicators of human trafficking, there's an 86.47% chance that this advertisement online is human trafficking related. The human expert will look at it and say, yes, computer, I agree, and build the case out. So not only will that make it so that we can find missing kids at significant scale faster than we can today. When I say faster, I mean, we're talking about a 200 to 300% decrease in time. It'll be near instantaneous. Not only will that make it so that we find human trafficking victims faster. When we started Deliver Fund, we took what was traditionally about a 21-day cycle for law enforcement. And through technology, methodology, and data, we reduced that down to 6 hours. This machine learning algorithm will actually reduce that entire time down to about 6 minutes. So that's where we're going on the technology side. And then obviously all the data and all the information that we gather is just going to inform policy. So government will actually make policies that work instead of just, shoot from the hip policies that we tend to see come out. So that's where we're going. That's the future of Deliver Fund into 2040.
That's great. Hey, first, thank you so much. Educational, disturbing, but thank you for raising your hand. I'll go after it and tackle this. Any last thing going? The one thing I want listeners to remember is this: is what is that for you? What leave us with something that ringing a truth thing that's going to keep us up tonight or encourage us to do something. What would that be for you?
That human trafficking is an American issue, that we are the largest human trafficking market on the planet. And human trafficking is not an over there thing. It's an over here thing. So to get involved, that might mean getting your church and church leadership to start taking the issue of trafficking here in the United States of America a little more seriously. To start, if you're a man listening to this and you're participating in the pornography industry, or God forbid, you're participating in the commercial sex industry, you need to take a really hard look at what it is that you're funding, because there is no gray area between saying that, well, my money isn't funding human trafficking. No, the fact that pornography and the commercial sex industry is a pass-through entity for the human trafficking industry, like that is an established fact. It's not even up for debate. And then I know you said only one thing, but then the third thing is talk to your children about, especially young girls and boys, about the trafficking problem, and about the fact that, how it works, how the cycle works, and that you are a safe person to bring this to, and you will help them solve the problem, not get mad at them for creating it.
So good. So good. We're going to post all those links for all your social media, for YouTube, your email. We're going to post your personal email up there.
Great.
We also have your phone numbers. No, I'm kidding.
Please don't.
But I won't. But thank you very much. And if in the future, if something comes up going, let's run this by a church in Colorado. We want to be that for you. All right. I don't know how we can partner with you. I don't know how we can get your message out more, but if something comes up, we want to be a good partner to you because I believe in what you're doing. So thanks, Nick.
Well, thank you. And we'll take you up on that. I appreciate the offer. Okay.